Welcome to another episode of Three Men and a War Game. I'm Paul, and this is Where the Fish Live.
Whatever that means. I'm Chops, or Kevin, a.k.a. Chops, and I'm the guy who doesn't have the game we're going to talk about today.
And I'm Potter, and I'm really upset that a new Mystery Science Theater is coming out that I have to fucking deal with now.
And if you guys didn't know the reference to This Is Where the Fish Live, I need you to go out and watch Touch of Satan. Because that episode's amazing, by the way. So I would recommend that.
I'm assuming that's Mystery Science Theater.
It is.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst, like literally one of the worst movies ever made. Like legit, yeah, it is one of the worst.
It is awful, but that is one of the best lines ever. All right. So big news, right? The other side showed up for most of us.
For you guys.
For two-thirds.
Two-thirds of the guys have it.
We are two-thirds men in a war game.
Well, three men and two-thirds of a game? Would that work?
Yeah, I don't know. Two-thirds of a war game sounds good.
All right. So, showed up the other day. It's going out for a lot of people. This isn't the right color. And
don't paint in podcast.
Yeah, no, well, that's not my fault. I didn't write it down. But, so Chris and I have,
we have the other side. We have all of our stuff I'm missing one unit, but, you know, Weird's getting that taken care of, so.
Right, which they told us before.
Right, I just somehow missed that notification. I don't know how I missed it.
It was at, like, the very bottom of an update.
What is that?
So apparently some of the kits did not get sent out with one of the add-ons from the kick or from one of the rewards.
Which model though?
It's the intelligence.
It's the intelligence core.
We're not going to get the field intelligence core.
Yeah. Well, so not everybody. So Paul got his guys.
But it's just the intelligence.
Yeah,
core.
Field intelligence core is a King's Army.
Right. Yeah. Unit box, yeah. So like,
which
yeah.
is one
so
of my
King's Empire
factions.
Guys. We got screwed over. Yeah. But I mean, like I said, they're taking care of it. They've already notified us. I myself just didn't see the message, so I ain't gonna get lit, you know, or upset about somebody, you know, for my mistake. So.
No, but that's better than not having any, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I can still field. I mean, we did the math, and I can almost field a two commander army with missing them. I just have to take a ton of upgrades.
Of adjuncts.
With the math that I did, that was with all three adjuncts that I have. I would just have to put upgrades on, you know, Samantha King's Thrace. Hand. Yeah, I'd have to put, you know, I'd have to put the King's Hand in there with all three of his upgrades. I have to put, you know, upgrades on Thrace, on Maxwell. So I pretty much have to max everything out to do it. And then plus, you know, all my stratagems that I buy. So, sure. I mean, it's doable. But hopefully, I mean, I think they said it would be within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's what they said, 2 or 3 weeks.
So, again, okay with it because in 2 to 3 weeks, I'll be in Disney. And so it'll be here when I get home.
That's dope. I'm really excited to hear that the dual commander pledge has basically two commander lists. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, because... Everything that so the dual commander one came with the King's Hand, from an Empire standpoint. So the King's Hand, Maxwell, a unit of infiltrators, and a unit.
Two units of riflemen.
Right. Yep. And then because of the unlocks through the Kickstarter, we got three adjuncts, Samantha
Motor
Thrace,
Scout.
And the two Motor Scouts. And then. I actually paid for Samantha Thrace before she became an unlock, so I actually have two Samantha Thraces.
All right.
So in about 2 weeks or so, when everybody's Kickstarters are out, she'll go up for sale.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Make some money off of that.
Yep. Earn my $25 back and hopefully some extra.
So I got the Gibbering Hordes, and they are phenomenal. One of the things about the models that are that every single one of them almost feels like a centerpiece model. They're big, they're honking, they're detailed, and they're creepy and crawly. So it's basically everything I could have possibly wanted.
Essentially, they're the monsters.
So let's get organized. Let's talk. Since you mentioned models, break it down for me, you guys. Where are you guys at on the? So let's talk about everything. Like knowing what we're used to from Weird, which is Malifaux, right? So some of the highest quality plastic sculpts you can possibly imagine. Very fiddly put together, and these are pre-assembled. So walk me through the quality of the plastic. Walk me through the. How you feel about the pre-assembly with regards to possible gaps and not cleaning mold lines and that kind of stuff. I want to hear all the gory details and all the good stuff too.
All right. So Paul, you want me to take this one on here? Cause we know that you and I have difference of opinions on this one.
Yeah. You start and then I'll just tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah. I kind of figured just like my ex-wife, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Shots fired. So, and I'm just going to put that there. She didn't do that. That's all a lie. I'm just being funny. My issue with the models, let's start with the good. The models are beautiful. Some highly, highly detailed, models in here. Even at such a small or a soft plastic, the detail that's in these models, fantastic. I have found nothing from a detail standpoint.
It's a weird soft.
Yeah, it's a weird. Like, it's like buoyant yet rigid.
Buoyant, so they float.
No, well, and that buoyant's probably the wrong. Like they come back. Like you know, that's flexible, but they go back to shape.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like when I think soft plastic, I think of that weird resiny plastic that Privateer Press uses. But it's not like that.
No, I mean
it's not soft, really. It's flexible is like the only way I can think of to describe it. Because you can like with the Gibbering Hordes, you can honestly like unfurl the tail and it goes back into position.
Right, weird. And the same with like the Riflemen. You know, you can mess with their bayonets and move them around, and they go right back to you know to center. So I mean it's a little interesting. It's a little off-putting at first too.
It's weird.
It is weird.
Just touching them, like they feel different.
It's gonna take some time to get used to. So on the aspect of the pre-built, it's nice. I basically had you know 40 models, and I had them all built. On, because they don't come on their bases, but they come, you know, so they're pre-built, but they aren't attached to their bases. So, which is nice too, which will allow for some potential scenic bases that people can do, which will be really cool. Can't wait to see people start messing around with those. But, you know, so that was nice because I had everything on their bases, mold lines removed, with the exception of the King's Hand, within, you know, hour and a half. So cool. That many models done, ready to play in an hour and a half is a feat unto itself. If you're, you know, if they were unbuilt and I had to assemble myself, you're looking at a weekend's worth of work.
Yeah. Days worth it for sure. Yep.
Right. So, you know, and that basically allowed Paul and I to go out the very next day and play a game, which was great. Really loved it. The issues that I ran into were, there was some bending of the stuff, so I will have to take the a blow jar to put it back into shape. No big deal. Because of the soft plastic, these are definitely models I will not be able to leave in the car when I go to work. So, and then go the out car, place, yeah. being in North Carolina, the summer heat will get to them. It'll melt them or bend the models. It won't melt the models, but it'll bend them. So I will have to be wary about that and how, you know, if I want to go out after work, I got to bring my shit into work. Otherwise it's going to bend. The issues that I ran into were I did have some glue splattered on some of my models, where I had to go and remove the glue afterwards myself. So How much of it was rushing to get the Kickstarter stuff out, I don't know. So I'm going to hold my opinions on that, and whether I say that that's going to be a big deal or not until we go out to mass release, because then it could be just a quality control issue that we're just having in general. Or it could have been, oh shit, it's been a year and a half. We said we would get this out, you know, last Christmas. Here it is at this Christmas. We need to rush and get it out the door. So I'm going to hold my judgment on that until regular release. I don't like the pre-built in the aspect of as a painter, there is a lot of detail with the King's Army that I'm not going to be able to get to because I have guns in front. And I understand people like, oh, the gun's there in the front, you're not going to be able to see the detail anyways. There are some of these where they're holding these guns out pretty far from their bodies. You're still going to be able to see the stuff underneath, but getting a paintbrush to them is going to be a bit of a pain. So as a painter and as a hobbyer, that is something that's a negative for me. Not going to be a negative for everybody else, and I get that. Me personally, that's a negative.
Yeah, my thing, I still genuinely disagree with you because nobody's going to be able to see in there.
But and I agree on the most part, but again, there are some that are there that you will see. Like, there's one where it's right in front of the face, and you're going to be able to see the face.
Yeah, you'll still be able to get enough paint on there that nobody will notice.
And again, that's fine for those other people, but not for me. Like, these are my models. Like, I want to paint them to a certain level. I want them to look a certain way for me.
It's like I'm not painting for other people. Right. It's like painting the inside of a cape. If you have a model that's in multiple pieces and you can keep the cape detached, you're going to paint the cape before you glue it on. It's just like how it is.
Who the fuck does and that?
Are you kidding me?
Glue that shit on there and paint it up.
No,
man, it's real hard
typically
to get that.
Paint. Yeah, I typically paint in sub assemblies especially with all my 40K and Sigmar stuff. That stuff's all in sub assembly.
I definitely assemble, but there are certain things that I sub assemble for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't. And again, like,
I don't have the same issue. I don't have the same issue with guns. But guys that are holding shields close to their bodies, guys that are wearing capes, there's certain things that I subassemble.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I just took the brush around it, get enough on there so that it looks like it's painted, and call it a day.
That's fair.
Yeah. And again, I get it. Some people are not like you. You're not going to have a problem with it. You know, you're more about playing the game than you are painting. You get enough paint on your stuff so that way when you're on the table, it looks good. And you know, you have fun playing with a fully painted army. Like me, I'm painting these models for me. When I look at that model, I want to, you know, I look at it for the time invested that I put into it, that I, you know, it's up to my standards, up to my quality, because I'm the one that's going to look at it the most. And I want it. I know it's not painted, and the OCD in me goes, that's irritating to me. Again, that's a me thing. Not everyone else is going to have that issue.
Yeah, you're
and
still.
It's not, I'm sure it's not easy to break. It's not easy to break the joins either, right?
No,
some of them are, but most of them no.
Yeah, they're pretty well glued. I did have two arms fall off a Carcanoi, so I did have to do a little rebuilding there. But overall, I didn't have any glue issues like Potter said he had, and I did have models that have gaps.
Yes, my King's Hand has a ton of gaps.
So does my Alpha Crawler.
Yeah, the Alpha Crawlers heinous.
You're not the only one with that. I've been seeing people on the Weird Place that have been posting theirs, and it's just an issue with that model.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really crazy. It looks like it's a crazy way to put it together. So I just wonder if it's more inexperience on the model builder's part that caused so much of it.
When you've got six-year-olds in China building your stuff, you know.
I know, at gunpoint, probably.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's also, talk in equal terms here, and that, there aren't any models like Gapfill more than Malifaux models. Like, the way they go together is just there are gaps in them, and, you have to do a lot of cleanup on their models. Like, it's not anything I'm not already used to as a
you're gonna have them and the thing is, like, I look at the model, especially say the Storm Siren, right? I look at her and I go, holy fuck, knowing what I know about weird models, there's no way in hell I would have wanted to have come anywhere near having to put that together, because almost every bit of hair that she has seems to be a separate piece. And right. I put enough gremlin ears on.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's spent any time building weird models is happy they don't have to put these together.
Yeah,
I don't want to do it.
I mean, just list, you know, Abuela, Steam Trunk,
dude,
Gremlin
Asami,
ears, Yanlo,
Asami, War Rabbit. Yeah, dude, there's so many. Like, but the fact of the matter is, their models are beautiful, and if someone else is going to assemble them for me, I don't mind spending the time I would already take to clean and gap fill anyway.
I agree with that. I mean, 100%. I agree with that.
So now let's talk about that the cleaning them real quick.
Yes.
You need to the mold lines, because the plastic is that bendy. I hate to call it soft plastic because that just doesn't sit right in my mind. Bendy plastic. The mold lines are really hard to get off.
Yeah, and because it is that bendy plastic, you know, it's when you go in there with an X-Acto knife, you have the risk of taking large chunks out of these models. So I would really recommend, if unless it's in some very delicate spot where you have to get in there with such a fine point, use something like the GW mold line remover, so that way you're not risking taking chunks out of the plastic.
What about a file? I use files.
Files would work good. Well.
Yeah, I couldn't find my file when I was working on them, so
yeah,
that's why I didn't use the file.
But yeah, you've got to be careful of that. That was one thing I did see was the going at it with an X-Acto knife was a little precarious at times.
But positives, let's talk about like detail, like facial details and interior details. Everything I've seen of those gibbering hordes is really, really, really impressive. But tell me about the King's Empire a little bit. How are they looking?
They are fantastic. I'm actually going and grabbing them right now. They're soaking in a bath water right now because there is a ton of release agents on these models. So wash your models.
Yeah, they absolutely have to be. I went right to spraying some paint on them with the airbrush, and it beat it up like a freshly waxed car in the rain.
So, yeah. I mean, from facial quality, you know, I'm pulling out, let's see, this is my adjunct. You know, the riflemen, they've got bandanas on their faces, so they're a little obscure, but like the infiltrators, I mean, they're what you would expect for something that small. Like they're still pretty detailed. You know, I've got a nose there. I've got, you know, the eye sockets, cheekbones with, you know, insets from their jawline with their cheeks meet, you know, lips, the whole nine. I mean, they're very detailed. Definitely right. Really, really good.
And the gibbering hordes are amazing. I know you said that already, Chops, but I mean, the detail on these weird alien type creatures is just amazing. And it's like I'm looking at a, oh God, what are they called? Friggin' shellfish ones.
The armored whelks.
It's the armored whelks. And like, it's interesting because the shell is kind of textured, you know, so it's smooth but bumpy, almost like an avocado, you know, where it's just kind of textured. It's really bizarre. And I don't know that you really see that in other companies. It's just, and I don't know if that's because of the plastic or what, but it's a very interesting feel to it.
Yeah, I mean, cool. The Motor Scouts too here, like you can see the line. There's a definite definition between the line at the cheek and where the guy's beard starts.
That's awesome. I like
so,
that.
I mean,
they're, I like hearing
yeah,
that.
These are going to be a ton of fun to paint.
Did one of them have a robotic arm? Did I see that right?
So the infiltrators do. The infiltrators have like kind of this like robot. I don't know if they're robotic arms or if it's just like their armor that they have, but yeah, and you can see gears in there.
And that's what I thought. And I was thinking almost maybe if you have your Stonewall Jackson model handy, or if you could give us a comparison to the WWX arm, I know that maybe sounds silly, but I feel like I have a frame of reference on that.
Yeah, I will say because it's only like you can only see right at the elbow, and because right where the bicep starts, like their jacket comes over it, and then their forearms, if they've got gloves on, so okay. You really only can see like at the back end of the forearm and right as the right at the bottom of the bicep and the elbow. That's all you can see, but. From a detail standpoint, comparing to something like Stonewall Jackson, it's on par. It's definitely there.
That's great because he's a great model.
Yes, he is. I love that model.
All right, so high quality models, a little bit of cleanup work. So pluses and minuses. Let's talk about the rule book because I've only seen the released web rule book, which doesn't have any fluff. It's all. Just the core rules.
So Paul, I'll let you take this one.
The rule book is a tome. That's the only way to describe it. It is GW huge. Big rule book level rule book. Beautiful hardcover. The pages are nice. The artwork is amazing. It's got your fluff, it's got your rules, it's got all your available units and fluff about them and who they are.
Let's name the key point that everybody's probably asking. It's got an index.
It does, and the index is much better than the one in Malifaux.
Yes.
Much better. Except for one thing so far.
Oh, yeah.
It is almost impossible to find initiative in that book.
Because it's done like the new 40K rulebook where they've got these little sub rules that are off to in their own little box off to the left or in the bottom or things like that, and they aren't referenced all the time. And so where the rule for initiative after turn one, so turn one is very clear. Initiative is very, very, very clear. Turn two and subsequent turns is not, and it's in this little box at the bottom of a page.
And the, and the problem with it, too, is that when you go and search initiative in the index, it takes you to the 3 and 4 player initiative.
Correct, which
and
is completely different.
It doesn't give you a reference back because it says something like initiative is just like in the rest – or is a little bit different than the rest of the game. But that's where your index takes you on initiative, not to this little call-out box. Yeah, it was a bummer because we couldn't figure it out. We probably spent
a good almost half an hour trying to find it.
Yeah, it was actually kind of embarrassing.
So, I mean, that is one thing. But so from a layout perspective, it's great. The rules are first. The fluff is second. Never seen that done in a rule book. Like GW's now started to change their stuff. Like they've got fluff, then rules, then fluff, just like Privateer Press does or used to do when they had books.
Right.
But yeah, this place is rules up front with your scenarios up front as well too, then your fluff, which I thought was a really good way to set a rule book up. I liked it a lot.
That's fine with me.
Yeah, it does a good job, and I mean. For as in-depth as this game is, it's, 27 pages of rules, maybe?
That sounds right, maybe. Based on my reading through the online PDF a bunch of times.
And that is lifted straight out of the rule book.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it's got beautiful artwork inside of it. Some of the best is the Abyssinia artwork inside of it. It's great. But they go through from a fluff perspective, they go through and they break down all the Earth factions. So they go through Abyssinia, King's Army, Guild. Then, they do the same thing for the Malifaux factions of, Gibbering Hordes, Burning Man, and Court of Two. So they lay all those out in the fluff, and they've all got their own little areas with their own character fluff and everything. So it's laid out really well. Weird has done a good job with it.
All right. So now that we've talked about the models, we've talked about the rule book, you guys have played a game.
Yes, we have. Before we talk about the game, though, I want to talk about something that was amazingly pleasant to me as I was opening everything. And that is the fact that they give you everything you need to play in your starter box.
Yes, they do. Tape measures, models.
models,
tokens,
bases. But they give you all of the tokens that you need for your tactics tokens, pinned, inspired, and they're dual side. So when you are confused as to which ones cancel each other out, you just need to flip the token and look on the other side, which is great. And like Gibbering Hordes, I've been thinking, oh, how am I gonna make, you know, something to represent these 100 millimeter or whatever 5-inch tide pools? There's tokens. There's punch out tide pools. There are objective markers, 50 millimeter objective markers that you need to be able to play the game. It comes with the fate deck. So everything you need, really, it's like opening up a team
for Guild Ball.
The only difference is you have to glue things on the base.
Yep.
That's awesome.
And I wasn't expecting that. I did not expect any of that in there, and it blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, same thing with King's Army. The infiltrators, the grenade templates in the starter box comes with it. What's up, Chubbs?
I was gonna say, if you think about it in terms of Guild Ball too, boy, Weird is kind of taking out the trash there. Just think about like a Guild Ball starter, right? 50, 60 bucks, six single piece models, and the new plastics, the sculpts aren't as dynamic because they're single piece plastics.
Yeah, until they start going back to the resin, yeah.
Little bit of terrain and then the tokens, but this is, you know, it's twice the cost. It's, you know, it's $100, but you get a tape measure, which you don't get. You also get all the tokens in there, big tokens, the fate deck, which you don't get dice when you buy a Guild Ball starter. And I think most importantly to talk is that you get on average 28 high quality multi-piece pre-assembled miniatures. Get the fuck out of here.
And the nesting bases are really nice.
Yeah, they are.
Go ahead, Chris. I cut you off twice. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I mean, these things are, I mean, I'm looking at them. I'm going to put magnets in them, and I'm looking through it, and I'm like, this is going to be a pain. The plastic is this. It's a completely different plastic than what the models are, and it's a very nice, hard, thick plastic. And, you know, I'm going to have to drill through it just to get the magnets to set in their flush. And these are nice. They're very high quality, too.
That's what I was going to ask, is how shallow the bases that the miniatures actually sit on, because my plan is to actually glue washers to the bottom of the plugs, or not the bottom of the plugs, the bottom of the main base, and then magnets in the plugs. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to have enough room to do that, but I don't know if that's the case or not.
You would need a really thin washer and magnet. Yeah,
so here's the problem. On the bottom side of the bases for all the minis, Weird has put their logo on the underside of it, and it's a three-dimensional logo. So you would either have to file that away.
I'll Dremel it off, yeah.
Right, yeah, Dremel it off, file it away, to get a washer to fit in there. But the bases fit flush in the plug base. So the top of it fits flush with the top of a mini's base fits at the very top of the plug base.
All right.
So they fit right. Flush.
Yeah, so it's not like it's above or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah, that's cool. I guess I'll wait to see them, because I've got all different widths of magnets. I hope that a millimeter and a half fits in, but doesn't sound like it will.
No, that's going to be tight.
Yeah, you'll have to mess with it. But I mean, you're the king of magnets, so you'll figure it out.
I'll get it figured out. Yep.
Yeah, you want to come back and let us know how that goes.
But it's going to be real nice too. So I mean, you could basically, when you go start to do your scenery, flocking and stuff, definitely make sure you're putting the models inside of the plug bases, and you're doing it all as one thing, you know, so that way you can line them up, make sure they look the same, because they fit very well inside of it. Weird did a very good job of it to make these will be some of the most scenic bases you'll see in a minis game because of the design of the plug bases.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, they're really, and let me tell you, they look fantastic on the table. I know
Yes, they
you
did.
were just about to start asking about our first game, and that is one thing that I will say about it is that it has the look of a company game.
I mean, if you go out on Twitter, Paul in face or Facebook, Paul's put a couple of pictures out there of his and I's game, and yeah, you can definitely see, we played a one commander game, so it was a little bit on the smaller side. But great thing is that we had listened to us when it came to the commander's game. Commander's games are now played on 4x4 tables, so pulling that in there, bringing that smaller scale in, it didn't feel like it was a skirmish game or anything like that. It still felt like it was a company level game, because of them adjusting the scenario size. So like normal, like the one we played was we had caches that we had to try and remove from the enemy side of the table, and you had your own that you're trying to protect. In a normal game, they have to be 12 inches apart from each other and 12 inches from a board edge when you're playing. Because we were playing on a 4x4, that was reduced down to 8 inches. So the Weird has done a good job of scaling down all the scenarios to single commander level games, so you don't have to pick and choose. You can play all the scenarios all the time, no matter what size game you're playing.
Right, and
Very cool.
with the one commander games being on the smaller table, you don't feel like you're missing out on a part of the game. If you're
Right.
playing a like 40K and you're playing, 1,000 points and you're playing on a 6x4, it starts to feel too spread out. So you don't get that here. So that was a good design element.
Yeah, it was a good design choice on that on their end.
That's cool. I'm glad. I mean, I've got a couple vinyl 4x4s for Game of Thrones and Infinity, so I'll just throw those down for single commander games.
Yeah, you're set for that then.
I don't
Yeah,
have
I
any
mean,
6x4 mats, though. I need to pick one up.
I'm working on getting a 6x4 for my apartment, and definitely we'll need some of these 4x4 mats to play games like this on here if we want. Because I'm hoping we'll be able to start recording some games in here.
That would be fun. So, Potter, what do you think of the scenarios so far?
I mean, we only played the one, so
You guys played Supply Cache?
Yeah, we
yeah,
played
Supply
Supply
Cache is what
Cache.
we played. I think once we kind of figured out what the scenario, how to actually play the
How it worked,
scenario,
yeah.
it was a very interesting one because and especially as a King's Army person, I really have very limited melee options. So going against a Gibbering Hordes where you are going to be running at me,
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be very difficult for me to try and get your caches out of the way, but at the same level, I'm going to be able to start pumping out a ton of caches.
Okay, so before you get into that, you understood the scenario better than me. Explain what it is. So
So,
this way people understand why you're taking things away and putting them down, and
right,
'cause it's
so,
button pushing like we've talked about in the
yeah,
past.
it's definitely a button pushing. So what it was is that so when you start the game, you have an attacker and a defender. So I was able to I was the attacker, Paul was the defender. And what that basically does is it basically just gets to choose who gets to have initiative turn one. That's all that did. So I got to go first turn one because of it. So the scenario is before the during after we deployed our army. But during our scouting phase, where you get to put out your units like infiltrators that deploy advancedly up the field, we get to put out these supply caches in our deployment zones, or our, I'm sorry, on our half of the table, and they had, like I said, they had to be 8 inches from a table edge, and they had to be 8 inches from another supply cache. Then what ends up happening is for at the end of every turn, you get 1 point for each supply cache that is on your half of the table. And then there is another ability that each of your units gain, that it for one tactics point, you can then remove a opponent's supply cache from their side of the table.
Can you put more supply caches down?
Yes. So in your subsequent upkeep phases of the game, you can spend two tactics tokens to put a supply cache down in your half of the table. So whereas Paul was trying to get across the table and wipe my guys out, I'm sitting there protecting my supply caches and putting more supply caches down where he's going to try and get rid of them because I'm not going into his half of the table. I'm King's army. I don't have any melee. I ain't going across the. I'm not going across the table. Not going to happen. He could have probably just basically sat there if he wanted to, sat a unit in the back and just spammed supply caches, and there was never going to be a way for me to get rid of him. I would have to just shoot him off the table, and then just out put supply caches out. But at a point, you're obviously going to run out of room.
So, what is it that forces conflict in that scenario? Are there any other victory point condition like things or?
You get 2 victory points for killing an enemy commander. So, like in our game, once we figured out, like, oh crap, we have to probably start putting stuff in our own deployment zones. I started putting some supply caches down, and I got very lucky because Paul screwed up, and did not reinforce his commander, and I was able to take the Siren out.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was gonna say also that the obvious confrontation is that you want to stop your opponent from being able to drop supply caches, right? Like that's
Right,
the other
and that's just it. Is like
thing.
I was sending because gibbering hordes are very recursion based. So I have guys that my striped skulkers or whatever they're called. I can't remember off the top of my head. They can basically show up anywhere on the table through either recursion or just a morale ability that allows them to basically show up anywhere. So I was going to his side of the table and trying to get his shit out of there, and that was and him having to go after the guys that were on that side of the table was kind of taking some of the pressure off the rest of my.
Yeah, I
Cool.
mean
I like that.
it I just got and I got very lucky turn one. I was hitting and I was throwing some high strength cards down,
Yeah,
strength checks down.
your deck was real hot turn one.
Yeah, so I mean I got rid of an entire Strite Skulker unit turn one. I got his Carcanoid down to one fire team left, and then through your own choices, you got one of your Strite Skulkers down to one fire team because you were eating them so you could go to glory. But basically by turn two, my entire army, with the exception of Maxwell, went was gloried.
I was going to say, if you were killing fire teams like that, you were also glorying.
Everything was gloried by.
And then once you glory, don't you get min fixed bayonets and then you're better in melee too?
No, so that's just a King's Army ability. I always have fixed bayonets. So, but the problem with that is that I take the -2 to the attack value with that. But when they're gloried, Rifleman's attack value goes from 5 to 7. So basically, when I'm in combat, I'm basically my base non-gloried ability. But the nice thing is that with Maxwell. What I took is I took his asset that allowed him to once it, if anyone within 12 inches of him gets an inspiration token, I then can put a token on or a reinforcement token on them. So and he can basically allow them to get inspiration tokens like left and right, like I'm giving out candy.
Yeah, that was a
So
pain in my ass.
All my guys were like had 2-3 stacks of inspiration on them. They've got 2-3 stacks of reinforcements on them because of this. So I mean, because it was such a small table, everything was within 12 inches of Maxwell, and that's such an amazing asset. Like I don't ever see myself not taking that asset on Maxwell. It's so good. And then the other one I couldn't get was to help with my card draw was on a tome. Trigger, I would do card draw on that one, but I never got to do it.
Yeah, and I mean, the nice thing about the gibbering hordes again is that recursion and the fact that they're always coming back.
Yeah, and I can't stop it. I mean, as long as you've got tactics tokens, which you're guaranteed at least 2 every turn at minimum, like I can't stop that stuff from coming back. The only way I can stop it is go. Cool, I'm just going to ignore that last fire team, but then you're just going to reinforce it because you have the ability to reinforce in the middle of the game. So it's like I can't not ignore them, but at the same time, I want to ignore them so that way you stop coming up in the tide pools.
Right, because the striped skulkers can show up in those tide pools. And actually, the asset that I had on the Storm Siren allowed her to spend a second tactics token when bringing somebody back, and then they can show up in tide pools. So really, with her, you have that option of anybody coming back if you have a glut of tactics tokens.
Yeah, which is what you used to do to me all the time when we were beta testing the game. And that's where I... Yeah, you were showing up on my side of the table, and it was it, and I was like, I got super frustrated in the beta because I was like, I picked the wrong army, because I'm like, I don't understand how King's Army is going to deal with this kind of stuff. But now that I kind of understand the King's Army a little bit better, the fixed bayonets, the fact that I can shoot into combat while I'm with my riflemen without a penalty, you know, and, as long as I've got the cards to do it. You know, there's a lot of different things that I can do now that I understand my faction a little bit better. So, and getting, you know, one fire team, losing one fire team out of squad, not the end of the world when it comes to those reinforcement tokens. And now that I know how to get so many of those reinforcement tokens out, I don't dread playing against Gibbering Hordes as much as I used to.
Now you got to worry about Burning Man.
Yeah,
Burning Man's going to be the
problem with Burning Man. Yeah,
Burning Man. I hope I haven't looked at any of their stuff yet. I really hope after the beta they kind of toned them down a little bit.
They're super glassy, right? So it's all about like forcing the Burning Hand player to have to make bad choices about how they're going to exploit the rules. But the question that I was going to ask you guys was. Around the strategies, I can't recall what they're called right now, but the four main missions, you know, coming from the fact that you guys know, you know, my preferences toward Malifaux and why I like it, do you see these scenarios being easily replayable, like having fun replaying them a lot, even though there's only four of them?
I think after a while it might get a little boring, but I'm hoping by the point in time that it does get a little bit boring, we'll have tournament packets out. But I think it's going to take a long time for that to happen, because I think the interactions are going to be completely different every single game, which will make it, will keep allowing that level of fun to continue to happen.
Yeah, part of me wonders if the Gaining Grounds equivalent for the other side will actually have 13 scenarios rather than four, but I guess only time will tell.
Well, how many are in the Malifaux book right now? Like the core Malifaux book.
Well, the core Malifaux book, right? You have your always scheme, right? So you can always pick that one. Then you have the Joker's scheme and strat, and then you have the strategies is four of them altogether. You have four, but then the schemes, you have the four that are suited. The 13 that are non-suited, numbered, and then also doubles and the jokers, right? So there's
that's a lot.
Right. It's a
lot
of variety.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see that many in other side, honestly.
I mean, you might. I maybe eight.
Yeah.
Ish, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I don't know that it, I think...
Well, look at other squad basically. Let's look at 40K. I mean, 40K's probably got about what, 6 or 8 in their core
12.
Book.
There's 12. There's 12. Six in Maelstrom and 6 in the other one.
Right, yep. But then look at all the other different formats that they've introduced into the game.
That's kind of what I was saying though. Like I just wonder if, you know, once the game gets its legs, if you'll have a thing where rather than flipping for the suit, you flip for the number. Yep. And then you get the numbered, and it's not a it's not a huge concern. Like I think, if the four scenarios are well designed, it's going to be fun to play them, and it'll surely be easy to understand how your matchups go, and it'll be easy. Like the mental math will be not quite as hard. I just, you know, like the game's longevity and its replayability are very important to me, and I guess I'm spoiled with Malifaux in that it's so infinitely replayable and every game feels so vastly different.
Yeah, I don't think you're quite going to get that with this game, to be perfectly honest with you. And you know, that kind of separates it from Malifaux as well, because you're not fiddling with quite so many. But what I think it'll be fine.
I what think I so hope too. To I, see, I wasn't trying to be a downer.
Yeah, I mean, what I hope to see is that we get something more along the lines of what Fantasy Flight's doing with Legion, where we get this slow trickle of these extra missions coming in as time progresses.
Yeah, maybe you have like packets of missions that are balanced. So you've got like four, you've got like sets of four missions that right. go together.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, we're going to, well, I'm sure we'll see, like with Malifaux, I'm sure we'll see some, you know, story encounters and stuff like that. So I think
sure. yeah, maybe oh, out yeah, there. Yeah. Scenario we,
I
play,
mean,
sure.
Weird has done a really good job with, you know, the Gaining Grounds. Because I remember coming in, you know, Malifaux in the very first year that Gaining Grounds was ever a thing. You know, it was pretty much my first year playing Malifaux. And from where they have come in those, what, 4-5 years and with Gaining Grounds packets, they have done nothing but gotten better every single time. So, you know, I think where Weird is at with their tournament development and their tournament packets with Malifaux, they are able to take that knowledge that they've gained over these past 5 years and apply that to the other side. And I think other side will be in a much better place its first tournament pack than what Malifaux was.
There's probably a lot to that. I think there's definitely a learning experience from what they've done with Malifaux and
yep.
being able to apply that to this game early yeah. on.
And with them only having, you know, two games that they're, you know, basically focusing on, they will have a lot of energy to put onto it. You know, where someone where you have like Privateer Press, where I feel like they're getting a little too stretched too thin with all these sub games that they keep putting out
and then granted, not supporting. All
right. Well, yeah, it's like they kind of support and then they don't. Like, you know, they brought Mon Pok back, which, you know, from everything you guys are telling me, the rule set looks really solid for it right now. You know, it's definitely changed its games from, you know, the kind of like, you know, now it's an actual minis game where it wasn't before. But now they're bringing back those board games. You know, they're kickstarting one of their old board games again.
That's not even that old.
Yeah. And I remember when that game was announced at TempleCon years ago when I went, and I've only been going to TempleCon since I moved to North Carolina, and I've only lived here 6 years. So yeah, I mean they're rebooting a game and they're kickstarting it, and they're where at the same time for me, War Machine and Hordes isn't where it needs to be. It's gotten a lot better in third edition. I mean we've talked about this, but it's not where it needs to be. And now look, you know, now they're putting out two other games, like, you know, Fix Your House, Keep Your House in Order. You know, first, and I think Malifaux is with third edition coming out. I think Malifaux is in a really, really good place for Weird to be focusing on another game. My downside to it is, hopefully, TOS gets the love that it needs now that Aaron is no longer part of the company.
Oh, I think that's a worry for me. I mean, it launched with four full factions, and as far as I understand, there are many factions in the works. At least two hinted at in the book.
Right.
Probably more in the back burner behind that. So I think the game's going to be just fine.
Well, from talking with Aaron, he said that the intent was to make it like Guild Ball, where it goes wide, not deep.
Yeah. So, I mean, again,
there's a chance that like the factions that we have now, this could be it for those factions model wise.
Oh, I'd hope there'd be more commanders than just like, just so you have more than the more options in your two commander games, but
that's the thing is that really it kind of with the way the rules are right now, it functions more like Monsterpocalypse, where you have your overall faction, your side, Earth side, and you can pretty much pull from anything on that side as long as you don't have more than 50% of your points is not your main faction.
Right, because you got to remember
so I can take Abyssinia, sure.
Right, like Earth faction. Like if you're playing King's Army and you're declaring King's Army as your main faction, you actually technically have three commanders to pull from, because you have your joint commander from Abyssinia that you can use as well too.
No, but what I'm saying is even beyond that, you can use Abyssinia commanders as well.
Right, correct. Yeah, you could do an Earth army. And it's both Abyssinia. You can take one pure Abyssinia commander, one pure King's, you know, Empire commander in the same list.
As long as it's not more than 50% of your points.
Correct.
All right.
Correct.
So, yeah, so really those options are out there. And, I mean, it just kind of like Malifaux with dual commanders, you know, whatever faction you declared, those are the upgrades that you're taking.
Yeah, I mean, but it'll be interesting to see where they've gone with that, because especially with, you know, for what has been hinted at with Malifaux, or when they put out the stuff with the faction masters that they put out so far, it looks like they've got rid of a lot of those dual faction commanders.
Oh, and M3E?
Malifaux. Yeah, for M3E. Just what they've shown on the website, like, you know, McCabe is no longer both 10 Thunders and Gil. He's just 10 Thunders.
Yeah,
now.
But Zip got a second faction. So, I mean, it's still out there. It's just they're changing it around.
Yeah, it's just going to be interesting to see
like,
how they
like
how
Marcus,
they do it.
Marcus now is dual faction.
Well, yeah, I did forget that they did make Marcus. He's what, Outcast and Neverborn.
Yeah,
now.
So yep. It's kind of. I mean, I know this is off topic from the other side, but that's kind of a bold move for a company to basically say, yeah, I know you might have been playing McCabe as Guild, but well, now you're not.
Well, I mean, look at Neverborn and Rezzers. I mean, they lost two of their main masters.
Right, Rezzers lost Nicodem, boohoo, sucks, I hate that.
Neverborn lost Lilith.
And Kaladi. They lost Kaladi.
Kaladi wasn't a main master, but I mean, I think the Lilith loss hits more than Kaladi.
Yeah,
I
was thinking of Kaladi when you were talking about that, not Lilith. But yeah, you're right. That's a pretty
now,
big
granted,
person
I do
to
like
lose.
I do like the fact that Nakima is now the new master. I think that's cool. I think it's fluffy. I think it's fun because it fits into the Nakima Lilith story arc.
Sure, and it does. But it's a bold strategy to say for a company to say, "Hey, we know you spent money on this,
yep,
but you can't use it."
And see, that was something Privateer Press as a company never dared do, because they've killed people off in their fluff, but you've always been able in tournament settings allowed to use those masters. I know
you can still do that in Malifaux.
Not at a tournament
list.
Level.
If it's an official weird event like Nationals something like that, like Nicodem and those guys are only usable in friendlies. Like it,
correct.
Like
well,
anything that
use,
no, no, anything
I thought you
that,
could use the dead man's hand in tournaments.
No, it wasn't
and
in
only
tournaments.
If the tournament. Right, only if the tournament organizer says it, but if it's an official weird tournament, it's not allowed.
Well, that does suck.
I mean, that's a pretty bold strategy to, you know, tell people that, but even like McCabe saying, okay, well, he's not in this faction anymore.
The other thing too to think about is the non-dead masters definitely have a chance of coming back. Like they can bring the masters back into the game.
I mean, yeah, Nicodem can come back dead now instead of being alive. Someone can res him just like they did with Molly, you know, and Lilith can get out of prison. You know, there's all sorts of things that they can do with it. Yeah, they're probably not gone for forever. They're probably just gone for now.
But just gameplay wise, like that's all I'm saying is that it is bold to say yes, you spent money.
I agree.
Sorry,
it is bold.
So
yeah,
I would love to be able to pick some brains and find out what that thinking is, especially, you know, because you have somebody like Privateer Press who's like, we'll never do that, right? But the problem Privateer Press is having with a lot of their games right now is model bloat.
Yep.
Right? So what's the right call? Do you upset some people and say, okay, well, we're getting rid of Nicodem in a tournament environment, or we're limiting, you know, the models that you can take, right? So, I mean, you end up with that as going, okay, how do you prevent this from becoming an overbloat of stuff?
Yeah, and that's what and bringing this back to the other side, looping back around, I think that's why they're taking that game wide, because it's much easier to just make new factions than to bloat out. And I think the way that we'll see Malifaux going is it's going to be, instead of faction based, like factions are going to be there and it's going to be a thing, but the game is going to be more keyword based than faction based. So like, even though like me as a now Bayou player, like I'm not necessarily worried about like what's the newest Bayou model that I want to get. It's more like do I want to use I'm trying to remember the keyword for, and actually it doesn't matter because it's beta stuff anyway, but like Summer's keyword, right?
Right.
Or like Zip's keyword. And that will be more of like sub factions inside the greater faction. And that'll be the way you purchase stuff anyway. So I think that's the strategy, is that's the way they're taking Malifaux. And I think they probably wanted to limit keywords at the beginning of the launch of the game. And I really think that a lot of these models will end up showing back up at some point.
I agree. I mean, and again, with the way that they've designed Toss, I think they can do the exact same thing with Earth Malifaux factions, because you can still, you know, I'm already looking at Abyssinia stuff that I want. Like, they have a lot of melee oriented models that I will need to probably be speed bumps for my riflemen in the back for King's Army. So like, as you know, as a player, I'm already looking for those to do. And I think they'll be having the exact same thing where I just have like six factions on the Earth side and I can just pick and choose from there what I need based on my commanders that I choose.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably highly likely how things will shake down.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just going to say, I'm okay with that. From a lore standpoint, it makes sense that the Earth side factions that would band together to fight against the Malifaux sides.
Yep. And I mean, I have a little harder time seeing Gibbering Hordes hanging out with Burning Man, but, you know, I guess Hormatagi does that for us.
Yeah.
Which I'm still having buyer's remorse on.
That's the quarter two model that you got?
It's the dual Titan faction, Commander. Yeah.
Oh, the dragon being a dual faction.
No, not the dragon. He's basically whatchamacallit, Godzilla.
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. The dragon is the dragon ball is Titan.
Rishi.
Yeah, the Titan for
Burning Man.
Yep. Yeah, I just knew that they had some Titan commander that was a dual commander.
That is Horimatangi. Yeah, that's the Titan commander, and he's only got like 16 script too. It's crazy.
20
rather than the
22, I thought.
Oh, instead of 25.
Yeah,
I thought he had way lower.
No, that's yeah. There's that's going to be coming, I think, though. You know, that's a good way to balance things.
Well, how many assets is he going to be able to take to try and stay alive?
I think three, because he's a Titan.
That's rough.
For you?
No, I would have hoped that he would have had more.
More?
Yeah.
No, three assets is the like that's the core mechanic of the game.
Yeah,
I know, but still.
You get much more than that, I mean, three with the fact that Titans can use a reinforcement token to flip back an asset. More than three would be insane.
No, I know. But, I guess it's for one of the things like why I don't like large base size Warcasters and War Machine. Like I just have a problem with my commander being at that such a big target like that. Like I don't. It's just something for me that I just don't like in a game. I never liked the battle engine size casters and War Machine. I just didn't like them. Too big of a target. Fair. Too easy to lose.
But you don't have to use them.
All right, right. I won't. I mean, again, like yeah. Y'all want to play them? Y'all can. You're just easy target for my riflemen. I'm good with that.
So the question I have now, you guys, is now that you've got a game in, where we've been anticipating this game forever. Me not having it yet. Where does this game sit in your I want to play it again? Sort of, you know what I mean? Like, is it? Do you think this is going to easily be your new number one? Your new number two? Like, are you already eager to buy more models? Like, where are you guys at right now?
I want more models. I'm waiting for November to get here so I can buy some more. I was trying to get Paul over here today to play me again. Right now, it's easily my number one game. And the funny thing is where I was at a few months ago when we talked about this with the whole Kickstarter. And again, I wasn't upset about the game. I was upset about Kickstarter. I've done a complete 180. this is right now. I'm having so much fun with the game.
Because you were ready to drop out, right?
I was. I mean, I even talked to Paul. Paul and I had a side conversation one time. It was like I was legitimately ready to get a refund. Because I was tired. I was pissed. I was like, it's been a freaking year. I want my shit, and I was angry. But again, Kickstarter, not weird, not the game design, not the models, Kickstarter. And that's where I was at. I had so much fun playing it. Right now, for me, it's a struggle between this, Legion, and Wild West Exodus. All three of them right now are my top spots, and I just don't have enough people to play or enough time to play all three, so I'll have to pick one.
Yeah, I'm in the boat, and I'm kind of thinking, like, the more I, like, sort of mentally play this game right now, it's going to be my number one game, to the point where I'm still highly motivated for whenever they launch whatever is going to be the henchman program for the other side. I'm probably going to be geared in. I'm already, like, sort of mentally committed to painting both halves of my dual commander pledge right now, so that I can run single commander 4x4 demos like every week if I need to get people buying the game and to get a store supporting it. So I'm really excited to hear you guys say that it's as good as you wanted it to be.
It is, and we're going to be trying to talk to some of the local guys here to run some demo days for our local stores as well too. So hopefully we can get those in and help build the community.
Go ahead, Paul.
All I was going to say was that luckily we have a large enough Malifaux community in this area that has also bought into the other side, so I think it'll be an easy transition to build the other side community in our area.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, for me, I've got a couple guys that are like dead against it that are Malifaux players in my meta, and we've got a big Malifaux meta, right? Like, we have, I mean, you guys know, we have at least four tables a week, basically. And it can go up from there. So, like, we've got a good, consistent community. There's, like, you know, I'd say over 60 regular members in our local meta Facebook group, which is, like, I mean, it's pretty big for a single, like, non-Games Workshop game in a city of, like, 144,000 or whatever, right? Like, it's pretty crazy.
And there's people who are just dead set against it?
That's
yeah,
crazy.
There's two guys that are like just not interested.
I'm curious, did they give a reason as to why they're opposed?
One of them played a demo, wasn't necessarily thrilled by the demo that he got at Gen Con, which I get. Those demos were kind of like sloppy and lazy and half-assed sometimes.
Yeah,
there was no terrain on those boards. And
yeah, they're,
like, there's a lot of things that – and also, like – I think he had just a general aversion to painting that many models. But I don't know. It's hard to say, but I still think that there's going to be an audience for the game in my local area. And again, I'm really eager to get it in my hands and start running demos, especially like starting with my local Malifaux community.
So one of the things that I will say is I think it's going to be the type of game that you can very easily get people walking by and they will stop and look at it.
Mm-hmm. We had several in our game the other day.
Because the design of the plug bases is unique. And especially with the Gibbering Hordes, all of those models were so interesting looking. And both Chris and I had our Titans standing off to the side of the table, even though we weren't playing with them. We had them there because, you know, we had to show them off. And
well, yeah, we knew we were going to have a couple of Malifaux guys there that night. They were wanting to see the models.
Yeah, we wanted to show them off. So we had them on the side of the table, but there were people stopping and being like, what the heck is that? That's awesome. You know, so I think it's going to be very easy. Yeah, it's like... like I said, I feel like everything in Gibbering Hordes, at least, is a centerpiece model. And so,
yeah,
I'll agree with that for Gibbering Hordes.
I think Burning Man and Gibbering Hordes are going to have that where they're going to have a lot of centerpiece models. You know, whereas I think Abyssinia in King's Empire, being that they're more pure human. You know, in Abyssinia more, they're going to have more of that mech, so they will probably have a little bit more standout pieces. Whereas me, like, I really feel the only standout piece I have is probably Margaret in the King's Hand. I don't know, though.
Once you start putting out a motor
scouts
scout,
are really
cool. Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. The motor scouts are pretty cool.
And the artillery piece,
I'm going to be honest with you too, and I'll show it when I get mine, because one of the only add-ons that I had was the ECB. And when I send you the pictures of those models, you're going to totally change your mind. You're going to want a box immediately.
Which ones are these?
The or ESB, the Brawlers.
Oh, I want those the South Wales Brawlers.
Oh, South Wales Brawlers. Yeah,
that's what it is. I want those guys bad. Just from the artwork, I wanted those when I saw the artwork. I want them bad.
Yeah, I'm so stoked.
Yeah, I think they'll be pretty awesome looking. I mean, I think once you start bringing in some of those different models for the King's Empire, I think you'll really start to see that centerpiece feel a bit more than just your basic guys. Cause right now other than the plug bases, there's nothing truly that distinguishes them from say like games like Wild West Exodus, you know, but
right.
Once you start having a guy on a velocipede and a machine gun, you know, and also your main commander is somewhat interesting with that giant fucking elephant gun that he's got.
Yeah, I love that
artillery team. Like,
yeah, the I want the artillery cannon so bad. I really wanted to put that in as an add-on. I just, when add-ons came around, I was so broke at the time I couldn't add anything. You know, Samantha Thrace was the only thing that I added on, and that was just because she was just as a guild player for Malifaux, I had to have her. And then I ended up getting two.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that.
So, but you know, Paul and I we did talk after our game the other night, and we definitely were saying that we're hoping that Wild West and the other side at Adepticon are going to be on completely different days, because we want to play both, and it's going to be a struggle. For me, it's going to be a struggle to figure out what I'll play. I think Paul's going to be still solid on Wild West.
Yeah, I'm solid on the other side. I mean, you guys know I spent the last year building a terrain, and I haven't even sent you guys pictures of the terrain. Well, I have sent you some of it. My Badlands board. I mean, I spent a year putting this board together. I'm ready. I'm gonna, whenever that the events go up for it, I'm gonna be offering to bring terrain and whoever's running it. So yeah,
don't get me wrong. You asked about where it sits, and I mean it's up there. You know, I wanna play it a whole heck of a lot more. It's everything that I had wanted it to be. And you know, Chops that and Chris that I've been amped about this game for a long ass time.
I mean, you convinced me to spend $300 on a game I never played in Kickstarter or something I didn't like. So yeah,
and there's some to be said for amped about a game that you've never played and still amped after you've got a game in, right? Like, but I'm excited. I'm excited and encouraged to hear what you're saying right now.
Yeah, I mean, everything about it is awesome, and I mean, I know I said it earlier, but I'm still so pleasantly surprised at the amount of support materials that came in the commander box. You know, I mean, that was a
pleasant surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't think that there were going to be tokens for tide pools and objective markers and stuff like that. It was just so nice to see all that stuff taken into account from Weird, knowing that you'd need that to play. Oh, and you know, one thing we didn't talk about, Chris, is that models that can duplicate themselves through some game mechanics come with tokens.
Yes. Sorry, yeah, we didn't talk about it. So like, yeah, the Velocipede, the Motor Scouts. So when they can duplicate themselves, so instead of you having to go out and buy multiple models for the duplicate models, they actually just come with tokens that you can put down on the field. So you don't have to go out and spend the extra money on them, which was fantastic.
Yep. I mean, that right there is a hell of a touch. You know what I mean? Saying like, hey, don't buy stuff if you don't need to.
Yeah. A gaming company going, hey, here's a rule for you to make extra models. You know, don't go buy the extra models.
Right.
That's huge.
Because then you know what? Then people will be like, that's cool, but I'll go buy it.
Yeah. I mean, GW would have never done that.
No, which is such a nice touch. It really is. And, you know, as Chops would say, it's just dick swinging confidence.
yeah
I mean that's really what it is. So all right, well, we're getting to the hour mark on this guy. So Chops, I know Chris and I have talked about our experience so far, so what do you think after we went through this? What are your thoughts on it?
I'm just still salty that I don't have it because I want to be playing it. I've been wanting to play it all week. My local hench, Aaron, like I feel like we check in every couple days because like I go to his house and we play Shadespire at lunch sometimes. And you know, we hang out every Monday. Even if I'm not playing, I hang out with him at the store for a little bit. And he's just like, "You get it yet? You get it yet? You get it yet?" And it's like, oh fuck, like seeing everybody getting it and not having it. But hearing you guys be amped about it, like I know I'm not doing my normal like spreading the gospel, but it's because, you know, I wanted to give you guys a chance to keep selling me on it since I haven't had a chance to play it, and I'm very encouraged. I'm really, really, really excited.
This is the one episode that Jim can listen to without worrying of having to buy something.
I know, because he's already bought it.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm saying, because he already bought into it.
Yep.
You're safe, Jim. You're safe.
It's all right, Jim. You don't have to buy this one because you already did. But yeah, so all right, Chris, how about you? Last thoughts on the other side so far?
I'm stoked. I'm enjoying it. I'm actually cleaning mold lines off of my King's Hand right now. I can't wait to get paint on. I haven't wanted to paint anything in forever, and I'm stoked to paint right now. So that should say something in itself.
That might be the biggest compliment you could give a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me,
that is pretty huge.
Yeah, for me, that's a huge compliment because I only paint when I'm in the mood. So if a game's got me in the mood to paint, it's you know I'm stoked about it.
All right, that's all awesome. Right. Yeah, and play the game. Get a demo. If you don't know much about it, play a demo. Plays differently than Malifaux. You know, it's got that big game feel, but it's really a skirmish game. It's a company game or a skirmish game disguised as a company game. So I can't recommend it enough. All right, well, let's do our send-offs here. Follow us on the Facebook, all social medias, Instagram and Twitter. We're at Three Men in a War Game, and it's the number three, not the word. And follow us on or support us on Patreon. We've got some stuff up there and we've come up with some more ideas. So keep your eye out on that. It's patreon.com/threemeninawargame. It's the full word, not the number. Music brought to you by Static is a City. And geez, I didn't do this last time, so now I'm forgetting. Is there anything I've missed?
Don't think so. Just thanks to all of our patrons.
I don't think so. That's it.
Yeah. Thanks to everybody supporting
us. Thank you guys.
You know, we appreciate it. So, thanks, guys.
You're playing Candy Crush?
Yes, I do it when I'm bored.
So
the beta for today is over, so I can't play any more Fallout 76.
Play Jetpack Joyride like an adult.